It's time to go deep for the exclusive info you need on the hockey team you love. This is Preds Insiders with your host, Robbie Stanley.
Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice.
On your flagship home of the Predators Radio Network, Smashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5.
And welcome into Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's doing well on this Monday evening in Nashville, Tennessee. Preds Insiders brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice for all your dental or sleep apnea needs. Visit KellyERice.com. Robbie Stanley here talking some Preds hockey alongside my good friend Jeremy K. Gover, who will be joining me for the entire hour here on the program. Jeremy, what's going on, my friend? How you doing?
Robest. How are you, sir?
We are doing great. Appreciate you taking time to join us. Jeremy, I got to tell you, it's been fun to watch this Nashville Predators team play hockey. They, I think, are exceeding most everybody's expectations at this point. They get a 6-1 win on Saturday afternoon against Chicago in a game where, I'll be honest with you, like, I didn't really think they played all that great, and they end up winning 6-1, which is, you'll take that every time against your division rival in the Chicago Blackhawks. But here they are. For about a 3-4 hour period during that time, they were in first place in the Central Division. Now they sit in second, entering into play tonight. It's been pretty incredible to watch this team so far this year. What have been your impressions of the Predators and what you've seen from them so far this season?
Yeah, mine is similar. The fact that we all kind of thought they'd be, I shouldn't speak for everybody. I thought they'd be a bubble team at best. I thought they'd sneak into the playoffs, but I thought they'd sneak in around 8th or 7th, depending on how tight the rest of the division and the Western Conference was. And so I had them as a bubble team, but getting in and then probably getting pounded in the first round, right, by some powerhouse like Vegas or Colorado or something. But that has not been the case. And instead, the best players, the players they pay the most money to, have stepped up and played relatively consistently their best hockey, and that is what they've needed. Now, you can get into all kinds of other little things like, well, you know, in years past when the Predators were doing really well, the depth scoring was carrying them. And that has not necessarily been the case this year. And so you can kind of get into those things. But I think overall, what you want to see, you wanted to see three things coming into the season. You wanted to see the big money players playing some big hockey, which you're seeing in Johansson, Josi, Duchesne, Forsberg, and Granlund. And then you wanted to see if UC Saros could play a full professional season of more than 40 games. And I think at this point, even though he hasn't played all 40 games, obviously, I think you know what you have in UC Saros. Yes, he could probably fade, you know, given that given the workload come March or April or something, but that's yet to be seen. You can't test that yet. So it is good to know that this is what we think, this is what UC Saros is. And the third thing you wanted to see is special teams improvement. And we've definitely seen that as well. So those are the three things you absolutely wanted to see. Everything else is just secondary.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And I'll tell you, Gover, one guy that continues to just kind of blow my mind with how well he's played, not really even just this year, but really since he's come up, and that is Tanner Jeannot. He's got 10 goals, 10 assists. You're talking 20 points in 33 games from a guy that was undrafted, a guy that, dare I say, this time a year ago, most Predators fans had no clue who this guy was. And here we are talking about 20 points in 33 games. And it's not just the, you know, the points and the goals that he brings to the table, the physical play, you know, the fighting when necessary, how fast he is. Like, a guy that big moving that quickly is a scary thought for other teams. And here he was again on Saturday, 2 goals against Chicago. Tanner Jeannot continues to play pretty well. And I know a lot of people, maybe even myself included, raised a few eyebrows when the Predators decided to protect him in the expansion draft. But that's looking like a pretty darn good decision by David Poile and company so far.
It is. You know, hindsight's 20/20 on that. In my opinion, it was some other things at play there. But at the end of the day, they did protect him and it raised a lot of eyebrows, including mine, yeah, like you said. But yes, to have a guy like that, an undrafted rookie, score 20 points in 33 games to this point of the season, and be one of their best all-around players, I'd say, right? He guy can chip in offensively. Obviously, he plays the big game, just mucking it up in corners and not just being afraid to hit somebody, but like seeking out, you know, physicality, yeah, on the boards and all that. He had a great play the other night where he He was on the forecheck. I can't remember who it was. Off, I mean, John Carlson, maybe it was. But he was on the forecheck, and he just bumped him right off the puck, and then and Carlson was in full control. So at the time, so you see a lot of that. Obviously, his playmaking is there a little bit, and so what make he had an 80-point. I don't know if anybody knows this, but he had an 80-point season in junior. Okay, yep. But before that, he wasn't really a points monster. So it wasn't like you know, it wasn't like, oh, well, this has always been his game, you know. But I am wondering what his DNA is. And what I mean by that is this a guy who can play third line minutes and put up 40 points a season, 50 points a season in the third line? Or is it more of a utility guy, like a Marcel Gotch times two? Because let's face it, he's
throwback.
Than Marcel Gotch was. Yeah, yeah. Marcel Gotch wasn't exactly, you know, seeking out physical punishment, right? But he was a guy that you could plug in on the first line, fourth line, whatever you wanted, and he could do the job, right? Yep. Kind of like Colton Sisson. So I do wonder if the offensive upside is in his DNA, or if he's just a guy that plays well no matter what the situation is. And so, but you're absolutely correct in the sense that a year ago today, January 3rd, 2021, I would say probably 18% of the Preds fan base even knew his name, right? So and those are the ones that pay attention to Milwaukee. And yeah. So it's great to see him do this while relied upon, as opposed to like, well, last year he was just kind of thrown in there because they needed a warm body. He played well, and you're like, all right, well, hey, we'll just ride this guy until he cools off or whatever. It's nice to know he hasn't cooled off. This really may be who he is.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, fully credit Tanner Jeannot for being like the singular reason this team has turned around. But I do think the way that he plays is kind of emblematic of the shift with this group of, all right, we're going to be hard-nosed, we're going to be tough to play against, and you're going to bring the effort every night. Because you know this, like watching this team 2 years ago, I don't think it's a stretch to say the team 2 years ago was more talented than the group they have out there right now. They were just totally lost. And, you know, the minute something went bad with that team, they just folded up the tent. It was over. And, you know, it was pretty obvious when John Hines first came in, there was a lot of repair work that had to be done, not only from the team and the style in which they needed to play, but also just the mentality as well. And again, I'm not crediting all this to Tanner Jeannot, but I do think the way that he approaches the game, along with a couple of other guys, you know, Yakov Trenin, Colton Sisson, name whoever you want to name, I think the way those guys played to some degree has rubbed off on some of the bigger name guys like your Ryan Johansons and your Matt Duchesnes of the world.
Yeah, because I think what's happening is Tanner Jeannot goes in, he's got pretty much nothing to lose because he's supposed to be a minor league player, right?
Right.
Air quotes for radio. And so you have a guy who goes in there and he's just kind of leading by example, but in the opposite way it usually happens. You know, you always hear about these stories about Jerry Rice. He was the first person to the practice field and the training facility, and he was the last person to leave. And you're like, he's a Hall of Famer. What in the world is he being – like, why does he need to catch another ball or two during practice? Right. It's because he was leading by example. So usually it's the star player leading by example. Everybody else is like, oh, I'm going to get my butt in gear because if he's doing it, then I got to do it. It's the opposite. Now you have Johansson and Duchesne, who are talented guys, should be 60, 65, 70-point players every season, where they're kind of struggling. You know, they kind of come alive in the playoffs maybe, depending on who you're talking about. But they kind of struggle a little bit during the regular season because, you know, it's just not prime time or whatever. And whatever, you know, I'm just making that up, of course. But that's my theory. And then you got a guy like Jeannot who comes in, he's got nothing to lose. And he does everything well. Takes coaching, takes criticism, goes out there and takes the body, goes out there and scores goals, sets up players. I mean, you know, he's hitting guys left and right. He's playing good. He's playing solid defensively for a forward. I mean, you've got all those things getting back on the rush. You've got things going for him. And I think the star players who are struggling are like, well, he's doing it well. And then all of a sudden, they get caught up in the, and he's so you're right in the sense, it's a long-winded way of saying you're correct that he is not the sole reason the Predators turned around, but I will call him one of the main two, three, or four cogs that have gotten this ship turned in the right direction.
Jeremy, does this team remind you? I mean, you've been around this Predators franchise for a long time. There have been many different types of teams that they've had that have been successful, that have made it to the playoffs. You know, obviously with Barry Trotz, they played a certain way. Peter Laviolette, they played a certain way. Obviously, it's changed now with John Hines as well. Does this group remind you of any Preds group from the past that you've seen? Is it just a totally unique group in its own way. What do you think about the kind of the way this team plays and the style they bring to the table?
So that's a great question, and you're putting me on the spot here, but I will.
I am.
I know that's right, but I will say that at first blush, it reminds me of the 2011 team. Okay,
reason I asked that question is because it reminds me of the 2011 team too.
Oh, great! Good, we're on the same page here. So, I mean, now I would argue though that this team has more star power than the 2011 team has. Okay, so I mean, 2011. It's not, if you go back, if you're kind of a newish hockey fan, let's just call it Stanley Cup Final on. Okay, right? You look back and they don't exactly blow you away. Okay,
no.
So Sergei Kostitsyn was your top scorer for the Predators that year, 50 points in 77 games. You're like, oh, that's a decent season, but I never heard of him before, right?
Yeah.
Marty Erat, a veteran winger, 50 points, 64 games. You're like, okay, that's pretty good. Patrick Hornqvist, you know who he is now because of who he became, but at the time he was just, you know, he was a guy that you hoped could be good, kind of like Tanner Janot, actually.
Yeah.
You know? And so your star power was more on the blue line with Shea Weber, right? Guys like that. So there's more star power by far. It's Ryan Suter, of course. There's more firepower on this team. There's more offensive upside on this team for sure, both on the blue line and in the forward position. But I do think that the makeup of the team and the kind of like identity, like we're going to go out there and we're going to go, we're all in on every shift. I think that reminds me a lot of the 2011 team when you had guys like Jared Smithson scoring 5 goals and, yeah, you know, Jordan Tutu, he chipped in 8 despite only playing 54 games. And, you know, Colin Wilson had a 16 goal season that year. It's Joel Ward was a huge story at that time. So you're kind of seeing stories like that. And I maybe not fully that level just yet. Like, again, I just talked about it. I can't speak out to both sides of my mouth here. I just talked about how the secondary scoring maybe isn't there as much as it has been in years past. But I will say that when Colton Sissons had to step up because Johansson was on the COVID list or whatever, right? What did he do? He went out and had the game, another game of his career, right? So, and Janot's got 10 goals and 20 points. So there's enough of those around that it does remind me of the 2011 team quite a bit.
We're off and running here today on Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Jeremy K. Gover alongside me here tonight on the program. We are taking your thoughts on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. When we come back, another big game for Philip Forsberg on Saturday. He continues to roll in the points. We will get Jeremy's thoughts on the way that number 9 has played and what that could mean for him as the Predators move forward here. All that coming up next. You're listening to Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Blackhawks now have Calvin DeHaan out defensively. Here's a shot by Forsberg to score. Forsberg from the top of the left circle. And the Predators take a 1-0 lead.
It did not take Philip Forsberg very long to get on the board on Saturday. The first shot of the game for the Nashville Predators in the back of the net by Philip Forsberg. He continues to play very, very well for this team. Robbie Stanley here with you on Preds Insiders alongside Jeremy K. Gover, longtime reporter for the Nashville Predators. Also, stud blue liner on the Mighty Drunks as well. What a stud Gover is.
You know,
I found that to be pretty funny. I was being serious.
I appreciate that. I forgot that a while back when I was like younger and lighter that you came to watch games, Robbie. I forgot about that.
Multifaceted, that Jeremy K. Gover. Yes. So, Gover, yes. Philip Forsberg, another big game on Saturday against Chicago. He scores the goal, which we just heard in the highlight package. Also makes a great play on the second goal of the game by Ryan Johansson to draw two defenders to him, get the puck to Johansson, and then the rest was history after that. Forsberg has 25 points in 24 games, 15 goals, 10 assists. So he is at over a point per game pace right now. And we know this. It's a big year for Philip Forsberg and the Predators. His contract expires at the end of this season. Right now he is playing, I think, some of the best hockey that he's ever played for this team. And it's becoming very, very interesting. Here we are now in the year 2022. You've got a couple months away from the NHL trading deadline. Number one, how do you view the way that Philip Forsberg is playing and has been playing for this group? And number two, how do you view the decision, not only from the Predators' standpoint, but from his standpoint as well, just a couple of months away now from the NHL trading deadline?
Before I answer that question, Robbie, I have got to point out just an incredible thing, and that is that the calendar year has flipped on this season, and the Predators, for all intents and purposes, okay, if you give or take 2 points, they have 5 point-per-game players.
Yeah.
Five. Roman Josi has 30 points in 31 games. Duchesne is 29 and 29. Granlund is 29 and 31. Johansson is 27 and 30. And Forsberg has 25 and 24. That's never been done in the history of the franchise. It's five basically point per game players at this late in the season. So I just wanted to point that out, that it's crazy. To answer your question, it is, especially if how much Predators hockey we've watched together. Philip Forsberg is tremendous, obviously. And I will agree with you that he's playing some of his best hockey of his career. But I will also say there's a caveat to that, which is that a lot of people who don't watch this team in game in and game out, they miss a lot of his pomp and circumstance, if you will, because they don't make the highlight reels because they don't turn up to be goals or, you know, big blocks or something like that, right? What's the one? A few years ago, he was skating into the Dallas zone on the penalty kill and flipped the puck over a defenseman's head, and then he got it on the other side and then strung it around. I mean, just that doesn't make ESPN now or, you know, whatever it is, right? It doesn't make the highlight. Even the NHL.com app. You're looking at the 5-minute recap of the game, whatever, because you missed it. Like, it doesn't make that because it's not a scoring play. So, he has played really, really well for a long time when he's in the lineup, and even if he's not scoring. But I will agree with you that he is playing some of his best hockey right now of his career, and he's being rewarded for it. The problem with that is, if there's a problem with it, is that the Predators now have to base whatever contract offer they're going to give him on these numbers, right?
Yeah.
They're going to throw the, hey, you haven't been healthy in 3 or 4 seasons. Yeah, like, they're going to throw all that at him. But at the end of the day, when it matters, which is right now, he's helping them to this near Central Division title. I mean, that's how close they are. So, excuse me. So he is just tremendous. Leads the team in goals, obviously, and he's done that in like 6-7 less games than everybody else. So he's great. My issue with him is, if you're the Predators, if you're David Poile, in my opinion, you have to trade him at the trade deadline if you don't have him signed, because he's going to end up walking for nothing. He may come back to you. Okay, he may come back to the Preds and be like, you know what? I wanted the choice to choose. David Beauclair, I believe, said this on the morning show, and he's filling in for you, I think, when you were in Florida or someplace with Rexrobe, is he threw out the idea, an idea I had not heard of, which is that, or considered, which is that Forsberg may just want the opportunity to choose from all 32 teams. Because the way he said it, I'm paraphrasing, was he didn't choose where he was drafted, which is Washington. He didn't choose where he was traded to, which is Nashville. And now he has a contract, and he's going to be at the top of the free agent list, which means, in theory, regardless of salary cap restrictions, he, as the player, has the choice of all 32 teams, Nashville being one of them. And so I think if you're David Poile, you cannot risk another Ryan Suter situation. And what I fear is that there's kind of fool's gold in the Mikhail Granlund one, right? Where he did 2 years in a row, they were a better team with him, which was true. Yep. And he walked, but then he came back, right?
Yep.
And I fear that will be fool's gold, that they think that Forsberg's going to walk and be like, well, he knows that he's got a home here, and then he'll sign in Edmonton or something, and then he'll be a 100-point player overnight. You know,
just playing with Connor McDavid, putting up 60.
Yeah, and Leo Draisaitl. Yeah, yeah.
Well, look, what your stance is on this has been my stance pretty much the whole time. Like, there's not a scenario to me where you can lose Philip Forsberg for nothing. Yeah. Now, having said that, the Predators are making this really complicated, because if you tell me that they're going to be in the same spot on March 21st that they're in right now. Well, you're talking about a team that's second place in the Central Division. You're right there on the doorstep of first. Like, it's going to be pretty difficult to trade Philip Forsberg if you're David Poile at that point, if your team is right there in a playoff spot. Like, to the point where –
fine. That's fine. But – and you are a better team with him, obviously, goes without saying. But are you willing to – do you think you're a true Stanley Cup contender? That's the thing. I look at this team and I go, of course, if everything falls into place, they absolutely are. If they were in 2017 and they didn't have Duchesne playing at his career high, they didn't have Johansson playing it, right? I mean, then of course, yes. But man, that's a lot to gamble on. And they could get a king's ransom for Forsberg at the deadline from a Toronto, some organization that is desperate to win a playoff round. And you put Philip Forsberg on that team. I'm just making up Toronto, of course. I'm just saying, you put Philip Forsberg on that Toronto team, they find a way to make that happen, and you could get two top prospects, like blue chip, not top, blue chip prospects, a first round pick, maybe a second round pick, or maybe two first round picks depending on the year. I mean, you can reload, and that means that the Martin Erat trade backed with Washington that brought Forsberg here would be paying a dividend yet again in 2022, and you'd restock that. For one player would turn into all that.
I agree. I'm just saying, I think this is just, I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. If the Predators are in this spot, if they're still in second place in the Central Division or third, whatever you want to call it, they're firmly in a playoff spot by the time the trade deadline comes around. Even if he's not signed, I don't think they trade him. I think they're gonna roll the dice with it. And again, I don't know if that's the right call. You can make a pretty good argument that's not the right call. But I also know that it'd be pretty tough to sell to that locker room. Hey, guys, I know we've been playing really well all year and we're in a playoff spot, but we're about to trade away your best goal scorer. Go have fun without him. I don't know if I can see Poile doing it.
I completely agree with you. I can see that as well. But honestly, this is you could survive it. Now, again, I go to a final, but I'm saying you could survive it in theory because you have Johansson, Duchesne, Granlund. You have them all playing up like where they should be playing, as opposed to where they have played with the Predators in, let's say, recent memory, right? So this is the one year you actually could offset it in a sense. But yes, of course, losing Philip Forsberg for a King's ransom or not is a huge loss.
So if you're the Predators and you're Poile, let's say Jeremy K. Gover is the general manager, which is something I'd love to see someday, is Jeremy K. Gover, general manager of the Nashville Predators. What kind of a contract are you willing to sign to Philip Forsberg? I mean, that's part of this that's really difficult too. Like, I don't know exactly where the number is going to land. I've heard he could get 8 years and $8 million per year. I've heard he's probably not worth more than seven. Like, I don't know exactly where his numbers are going to land. What is the contract, kind of the max you'd be comfortable going with Philip Forsberg?
$9 million a year.
Nine.
I think he's that good. And I think, and honestly, if we're talking about like realism here, his agents have the Preds over a barrel in the sense that they can be like, look, you gave Ryan Johansson eight and you gave Matt Duchesne eight. Like, this, he's a better player and younger, by the way, than those two players. So therefore he's got to be worth more. And that's absolutely true. So in my opinion, he gets nine a season. If he goes somewhere else to like maybe a bottom feeder, like if Arizona wants to kickstart their rebuild or something, and Forsberg's all about the money, he might not be, but if he's all about the money, I could see them giving him 11 or 12. Maybe 10 or 11. But but if he wants to stay on a competitor that he's known and all that, I think nine. I think nine a million a year is where you rest.
Well, that's the other part of this that is really interesting to me, is not only the way that the team feels about him, but how does he feel about the team? Because I think that was a legitimate question heading into this year. It wasn't much of a secret. Like, he wasn't very happy with the Victor Arvidsson trade. I don't think he's very happy with the Ryan Ellis trade. And you know, he was pretty open about it to begin the season, saying, you know, it's tough to see guys that you know can play at the NHL level go out the door, and the return back for them, while it may help you in the future, it brings you basically nothing right now. So I think it's pretty obvious that Philip Forsberg was upset about that. And look, we all had questions about this team heading into this season. What they've done so far has blown me away, to be honest. I did not expect them to be anywhere near as good as they've been. I wonder how much the way the team has played, the way he's played with this team, maybe has shifted the viewpoint of Forsberg so far this year. I would assume it can't have done anything but help the Predators with the way they played.
I agree with that, and I also would also throw in another log on the fire and say that Mattias Ekholm was re-upped. Now we've talked about this off air, of course, that Ekholm was a different, like, we kind of knew going into the season he's a different mentality than Philip Forsberg is.
Yep.
And Ekholm wants to stay here, and Forsberg might. No one's saying Forsberg doesn't want to stay here. I'm simply saying that he might be more like, look, this business has bitten me twice. Arvidsson's gone, Ellis is gone, maybe some other things that I can't think of were gone. You know, other players have moved out because of business or whatever. So I'm going to be a businessman, and I'm going to go get my money. He may be thinking that. But he also may be thinking, I'm not saying anything, but I'm coming back here. We just don't know. So at the end of the day, you're absolutely right. Mattias Ekholm did re-up. That's a feather in their cap. They are a competitive team right now with, apparently, a great foundation of players around them. So So that's a feather in their cap, and they are a better team with him. That's a feather in their cap. But again, his agents have them over a barrel because they can say, you've given these two veteran guys $8 million a year. He's a better player than both of them. You got to give him more. And they may not be willing to do that. And honestly, Robbie, we haven't talked about this yet. He's going to require, and they should give him, a no trade. He's going to require that at this point. Because again, the business side has bid him. So he wants control, and he's not going to sign without it. So maybe he takes $8 million, but he wants that no trade. But either way, that's going to be a part of it too. And we all know David Poile does not like to give those out unless he has
to. He doesn't like to give them out. But I think if you're Poile moving forward, you've also eventually going to have to realize that you're going to have to start giving those out a little bit more frequently.
Agreed.
Like Roman Yossi's got one. I think we all understand. Like Roman Yossi, you give Roman Yossi pretty much whatever he wants to keep him here.
Absolutely,
and that's,
you do.
That's what they did. You know, Matt Duchesne's got kind of a modified no trade that kicks in here.
It's the end of his
years.
Contract, right? The end of his year.
Right. So he's given out, you know, a couple more of those as of late. Like to me, if I'm Philip Forsberg, I'm probably not signing a deal here unless you give me a no trade because I just saw you trade Arvidsson. I just saw you trade Ellis. You're not doing that to me if I sign a contract here, if I'm Philip Forsberg. So I'm interested to see how Poile would handle that in terms of negotiation. Now, there's the other side of this too. And I know some Predators fans, although I do wonder how they feel about this now with how well Matt Duchesne and Ryan Johansson have played this year. But there's this camp of the Predators fan base that's just like, all right, you got to get out of the business of handing players long-term deals, which I understand. You don't want to get locked down to an 8-year deal with Philip Forsberg. And by the time he's 31 years old, he looks like a shell of himself. He keeps having injury problems and you're stuck with that contract. I think you also have to realize if you're a Predators fan, like, that's fine to approach business that way for a little while, but eventually if you won't keep some players, you're going to have to get back in the business of signing long-term contracts. It's just, that's the way it is.
I totally agree. And one last thing I'll say about this is that they do have the luxury, the Predators do, have the luxury of guys coming up behind him. So if they do move on from Forsberg for whatever reason, it could be just exactly what you said. They're like, look, we want to give him money, but we can't afford to give him 8 years or whatever the case is. They've got a guy like Tomasino. I'm not comparing him to Philip Forsberg. I'm just saying that he's the same type of offensive winger dynamo, right? So you got a guy like Forsberg. If Tolvanen ever evolves into what we think he's going to evolve to, they've got him. So it's not like if they get rid of Forsberg, there's an empty cupboard behind him to fill that role. Tomasino may be 2 or 3 years away from filling that role, but at least he's in the system. And so we do have to I guarantee Poile has something like that in those plans as well.
Last thing about the Forsberg topic, and this is going to be something, as you mentioned, that comes up from the Predator side of things in negotiations and is, I think, a big concern with the fan base as well, is the injuries. We've already seen it once this year. He's gotten hurt, missed 9 games. Now, if you go and look through his career, he's never really had a major injury that you're concerned about. It's not like, you know, he's broken his leg or torn his ACL or something like that. He's had a shoulder injury here, hand injury there, concussion here, you know, whatever, knee bruise there that's kept him out of the lineup. It's been a while since he's had a full season. I think sometimes the injury concerns get blown out of proportion a little bit. Are you concerned with Philip Forsberg and his injury history as the Predators move forward here?
I'm not concerned with it because if he plays, let's just say 70 games a season on average the rest of the way out, who cares? Right.
Yeah.
But I will say that he's 27, and that means his next contract will end when he's 35, which means he will not be the same player that he is, even if he's great, right? Even if he's a great player, he's still not going to be the same player he is now. And so, therefore, if his body breaks down for whatever reason, then I'm very leery about giving him that $9 million a year now, right? But you can't predict the future. You just have to go with what you know. And right now, what they know is he can't finish a season fully intact. But he's also very impactful when he is on the ice for roughly 75% of the year, which you would take if you're Nashville. I think you'd take it if you're any team for Philip Forsberg. He's that important.
We'll continue the conversation on the Predators. Welcome more of your thoughts on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. By the way, Tim from Lewisburg texting in, what team are the Mighty Drunks? Haha. If you haven't seen it in person, it's a beautiful thing to see. Let me just
it's
tell
a
you
sight
that.
To behold.
Go watch something at the Ford Ice Center. You'll find some Mighty Drunks hockey staring you down the barrel. We'll continue the conversation on the Predators coming up next. We'll get Jeremy's thoughts on the job that John Hines has done with this group and could he potentially be involved in Coach of the Year conversation? We'll get into that coming up next. This is Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside the great Jeremy K. Gover here with you on this Monday night in Nashville, Tennessee. Brought to you by Dr. Kelly Rice. For all your dental or sleep apnea needs, visit KellyERice.com. We are talking Preds, taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Jeremy, we talked earlier in the show about the style of play the Predators have played with, you know, what they bring to the table on seemingly a nightly basis now. I think, look, it's pretty obvious to me. It's night and day different from what we saw a couple years ago out of this group. And obviously, there have been many things that have changed about this group in the last couple of years, but most notably is the coach and the coaching staff that is now in place, John Hines. It's been a weird time for John Hines. His first year, he takes over, and about a month and a half in, COVID comes along, the season pauses, you go to the bubble, and all of a sudden, you're back out. You have more, I guess, of a somewhat normal year last year, 56-game season, but still a COVID season. You're awful in the first half of the season, and then you catch fire in the second half. UC Soros plays great. You get to the playoffs, give Carolina all they can handle in that series. And now you got off to a start that most people did not expect the Predators to get off to this year. My question for you is, how much credit does John Hines deserve for what we've seen out of the turnaround in this group? And what do you make overall of the job that he has done and the hire that David Poile made to this point with John Hines?
So this is a complicated answer, Robbie, because on one hand, you know, John Hines is known for getting the most out of younger players and kind of crafting younger players, which if you go back to, March of 2020, it is last year now, March of 2021, right, when the turnaround actually happened, that big road trip, right, when Rene came in and just played out of his mind and all of a sudden they were doing well. He had put in guys like Tanner Janot. We talked about the Yakov Trenin, guys like that, younger guys. And it's, I don't want to discount the job he did, because any younger player who wants to stick in the NHL is going to do whatever the coach says to do within his power. Okay. But they did that, and they were successful. Next thing you know, he's telling guys like, it was a Luke Cunningham, who was out of the lineup with an injury or something, and he Cunningham had a conversation. Hines talked about it on your airwaves They sat down with Cunningham and they said, you know, if you want to get back in the lineup, you've got to do what these other guys are doing that are in there right now that are being successful.
Yep.
And lo and behold, he's that way, and he's an impact maker, right? So he deserves a lot of credit when it comes to the younger players, but I'm going to say that his success is actually can be judged by two players, and that's Johansson and Duchesne. Johansson and Duchesne are veteran guys. They have seen their fair share of coaching changes, right? They have seen the doldrums of bad teams. They've seen the heights of good teams. So they've seen it all, essentially. And could have easily said, look, as long as we play well enough in the regular season to get in the playoffs, who cares? Let's not get hurt. Or, you know, whatever cop-out they wanted to use. Like, I'm a veteran. I've been around this league a long time. I'm a 60, 70-point guy. You know, all this kind of self-talk, building them up what they were. The coach... We're in an organization right now that doesn't like to fire coaches, but we're going to outlast them. We got our contracts. We're good. He can go away. We'll get somebody else in here. They could easily have done any of those things, any of those excuses. Instead, they both came in. Whether it has to do with John Hines or not, it kind of does. So you have a turnaround by Duchesne and Johansson this season that cannot be understated. And, again, it's January. It's not like it's November 1st and they're point-per-game players. You're like, all right, you know, good start to the season. They're pumped, you know, whatever. But they have sustained it. And so I think a lot of that credit goes to John Hines, whether accidental or direct. And I think that you can judge John Hines' job and the job he's done in Nashville based on those two guys. Because, again, the younger players, he likes to craft those guys. That's his skill set. So to get through to veteran guys and have them kind of resurrect their careers more to what they kind of should be, what they're getting paid, that says a lot.
Well, I think it's a great point, and I think it took a while too, because I remember when he first got here, there was a game, I think in Vancouver, where they were just getting shelled. I mean, I think it was that year where every time Vancouver went on the power play, it was in the back of the net against the Predators, and they were just getting shelled. And you turn around, you look at the ice time, And it's like Victor Arvidsson at 8 minutes, Philip Forsberg at 9 minutes, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson at like 9 minutes. And you're thinking to yourself, huh, so did he just bench those guys for like the third period? And yeah, he did. Like he put those guys on the bench. That's basically where I think kind of the turnaround started. Now, Forsberg, I think, has been a little bit different from the other two. Like, generally speaking, when he's been in there, he's been pretty darn good for this team, regardless of who the coach has been. You know, obviously, every time the playoffs come around, like even in the bubble when they played Arizona, I thought Ryan Johansson was spectacular in that series. So we know what Johansson brings to the table in the playoffs. Like, it basically, and Duchene's talked about this, like this past offseason, like they basically had a come to Jesus meeting with him and Johansson and Forsberg and just about the way that Hines wants them to play. And to their credit, it feels like Johansson and Duchene have finally bought all the way in. Johansson's talked about, you know, just the what sounds so simple, but moving your feet all play long, every play. With his skill set and with the size he brings to the table, he's just really difficult to handle when he does that. So I agree. I think John Hines deserves a ton of credit for that. And I think it took a little bit longer than you would have liked, but he finally got through to those guys. And look, now I think if you're a Predators fan, maybe you view those contracts a little bit differently. I mean, we were talking in the summer about, hey, is there any chance that Seattle could take on a Ryan Johansson or Matt Duchene contract? And I kind of knew there was no chance from the start that they were going to do that. Now, obviously, the conversation around those two has changed. You talked about it. They're point-per-game guys at the moment. That's a great place to be. So John Hines deserves a lot of credit for that. It is interesting, though, Gover, because I feel like there has been this segment of the Preds fan base ever since he was hired of, it's not the guy. I don't want the guy from New Jersey that got fired, made the playoffs one time. He's not the guy that's going to take you over the top. And there have been so many people that have been just vocal about John Hines and how they don't want him to be the coach. You hear a little bit less of that now so far this year when it comes to John Hines. I think Adam Vingan calls them the Never Hinesers. That's his technical term for that crowd. But I do, like, I'll be honest with you. When they made that hire, I was like, really? You hired John Hines, and they did. Remember, they did it like 24 hours after Peter Laviolette was fired.
But remember, I don't know if you're forgetting it or not, but maybe the listening audience doesn't understand. Their baggage came with that hire. Oh, meaning, yeah. Poile, right, is always looking out for his team, hired Laviolette. Well, Laviolette was a former head coach in the USA hockey system. John Hines, exact same thing. USA, yep. Familiar with him for the USA hockey. So there became kind of this thing like, is this a good old boys club? Are you just hiring your buddies or like the guys that you've done well in tournaments where guys are auto-motivated to win a medal or whatever? Like, is this – it can't be NHL related. So all that baggage now, at least at this point, has been shed. And I think he's kind of earned his right to stick around for a while and see how this all plays out. Because, again, I do think it comes down to – Yossi's been a beast no matter what. Right, just depends on what the level of his beastdom is. But Granlund, his career turned around when Laviolette left. I mean, he scored a goal that first game.
It's almost like he was, thank God, Laviolette's out of here. Yeah.
So I don't know if that's a result of that, but it was just funny. So he's been great since Hines. And then again, the young guys, you know, they've come around. Okay, we're going to do whatever the coach says. And apparently, his system is working because they're doing what he's asking them to do because they want to stick around in the job, and they're having success. And that only positive motivates. The one thing I will say about this though is the Duchene thing is so weird because you know Duchene is not silent even on your show. He's respectful, but he's not silent about wanting to be a center. I'm a natural born center, you know. I want to be a center, you know, whatever. But his best season is coming as a wing. Yeah. And so it's almost like John Hines is like, well, we're going to put you on the wing because, you know, you don't really – I'm not saying he said this, but you don't deserve to be center right now. Go out and prove you can be a center and put out those big numbers, earn your contract, and then we'll see what we can do. Well, now it's positive reinforcement to what John Hines wants. Now he's put him on the wing, and he's found a home, and he's lighting it up. So how do you change that? So all signs right now as of January 3rd are pointing towards Hines is doing a great job with the rookies, the young guys, and the veterans.
Well, and, you know, the story, look, I thought the turnaround last year he deserved a lot of credit for. I also understood, you know, kind of coupled with that was your goaltender had a 940 save percentage in the second half of the season, which is just absolutely absurd. So, you know, my question was, you know, when that save percentage comes down, does this team look the same? Do they play the same? Now, to UC Saros' credit, it hadn't come down that much. Like, he's still pretty beastly out there with the numbers that he's putting up. But not only has the way they played kind of sustained through this, I think they've built on it. And I think that to me is a pretty good sign if you're a coach of, you know, your team buying in and the job that you've done. Now, look, is John Hines ultimately going to be the coach that gets them back into Stanley Cup contention and gets them back to making deep playoff runs? I don't know. Like, I think it's really difficult to answer that question at this point. I think it's pretty fair to say at this point with this roster and this group, they're way ahead of schedule right now from where I thought they'd be.
I agree. And let me go back to your UC Saros thing. So for those who don't know, he has a 925 save percentage, which seems like a lot. So it's a what is it, a 0.015 difference, right? But in the grand scheme of things, it's not that much. And he's winning. So he's 16-9-1, okay? He's played pretty consistently. I don't think he's been yanked so far in this. I don't think so.
I don't think so
maybe
either.
He has. But if he has, it's been like once. So he hasn't been pulled from a game. So you've got a guy who – you got a reliable starter now who has proven that he can be basically the guy he was last year when he got on a heater. And just so many things are going right for you. I guess what I'm getting to is I want to see – I don't want to see, because that would mean they're losing. But I want to see what the Predators do when they kind of hit a skid, right? Let's say they win – I don't know, 2 games out of 6 or something like that. Like, do guys start being like, I'll take care of it myself? And then they rise, and then they don't, all the ships sink. So I don't know how that's going to work, but for right now, with what we have to look at, a 224 goals against by Saros is ridiculous. A 925 save percentage is near the top of the league, and you can't ask for much more than that. And again, they're winning. If he can have a 925 and they can put up offense like this, that's the opposite of what it was like last year when he had to put up a 940 for them to survive. Yeah. So you kind of take and give.
When you start to really dig into the numbers on Saros, like, it's pretty remarkable what he's done. When you take account about his last, you know, 55 starts, I want to say he's given up 2 goals or less in around like 42 of them. Like,
that doesn't surprise me at all.
It's pretty nuts the way that he's been able to play for this group. He has played exceptional hockey for the Predators. They're on the road this week, beginning tomorrow night in Vegas. They'll go to LA on Thursday and then take on the mighty Arizona Coyotes on Saturday night on the road, who, while they may not be a very good hockey team, at least they have great jerseys, Gover.
Yeah, they do. But and they got one guy. I think they have one forward who signed pass this year, by the way. That's not a joke. That's real.
Oh, yeah, it's real. Well, at least they can get into their own arena now. At one point, that was a that's a problem this year.
Paid the water bill. That's about time. But, you know, what the crazy thing, Robbie, is, you know, if they beat Vegas tomorrow, in theory now, okay, I'm just in theory, they will be 1 point away from top of the Western Conference.
Yeah.
I mean, that's – and again, this is not October 20th. This is January 3rd. This right. is a decent sample size, you know. So – excited about where this season could go, how far they can make a run, because again, they shouldn't even be making a run at all. Everyone thought, again, bubble team at best, and so to have them challenging for a Western Conference title at this point with a goaltender who's playing this well, like you mentioned, and with the star players playing like star players, it's, I mean, Yossi could win another Norris. I mean there are all kinds of wonderful things could happen.
Well I'm glad you brought that up. We've got just a couple of minutes left. Is Roman Josi your Norris Trophy winner right now at the season and today? I know Cale Makar has been great. A couple other guys have been great so far this year. I think there's no question he's a finalist at this point. You think he's the winner?
I got to give it to Makar. If I'm predicting, right? My vote would be Josi because I think he's a more well-rounded player. But if I'm predicting who's going to win, I would say Makar because he's got buzz around him, right? Yep. So he's got kind of got that lightning rod kind of spotlight around him. And so,
and make no question about it, that dude is electric.
Oh, he's awesome. Yeah, there's no question. But I still think Yossi's a better all around player. Again, he's a point per game player like Hedman is, like Adam Fox is, like basically John Carlson is. You know, Quinn Hughes is right there. And then there's Makar, right, who's a point per game player also, but he's missed some games. So, you know, I just think Yossi is definitely a finalist. I don't know if he wins again, because I think Makar is ready to take that up. We know from playing in the Western, from watching, following the team and covering a team that plays in the Western Conference, we know that East Coast bias is a real thing.
It is.
Because when I'm on the East Coast visiting my in-laws for holidays, okay, and a football game doesn't start till 1 o'clock, I'm like, what am I wasting my morning for? Like, it just seems so much different. It's only 1 hour difference, but it seems so long. And so I can only imagine these games that start on the, you know, Mountain and Pacific time zones, you know, that start at 10 o'clock, you know,
yeah.
It's just crazy. You can't possibly watch them all. You just look at box scores if you're on the East Coast, and that's, Makar already has that magnet, so you're looking at what he's doing, and when you see 1-2 points a game, you're just like, this guy is unreal. But Yossi, I think, is the better all-around player, and I'd like to see him win the Norris, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Gover, appreciate you taking time to join me here tonight, buddy. It's been fun.
And I thank you so much for asking me, buddy.
Absolutely. Jeremy K. Gover, great all-around guy. Great reporter for the Nashville Predators as well. We appreciate him taking time to join us tonight here on the program. Hope everybody has a great week. The Preds back in action coming up tomorrow night against Vegas. We'll catch you next Monday night on Preds Insiders here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.